Welcome to the Coalition for Career Development Center's Career Readiness for All podcast. The CCD Center is committed to making career readiness the first priority of American education. We believe that by providing all learners with high-quality career development services and technology, we can help ensure learners secure productive employment in their chosen careers as efficiently and cost-effectively as possible. The CCD Center collaborates with leaders from business and industry, education, government, and nonprofit organizations to create a national movement dedicated to helping all learners become career and future ready. On this series of podcasts, we will interview thought leaders and experts on the importance of communicating the value of career development, highlight best practices, and explore how we can empower all leaders in business to become champions of career development.
But I just wanted to say how excited and a bit nervous to have this privilege of welcoming our Honorable Taryn McKenzie Williams, our Assistant Secretary of Labor for Disability Employment Policy, and bring you into our CCD Center Policy Forum. So Taryn, this is just, it's really great. It's wonderful to have you speak with us today. In your position, you're advising a whole bunch of range of things, especially ODEP, right? The Office of Disability Employment Policy. But it's just great to have a federal level of all the different ways in which we can get our employers and governments working, hopefully in a collaborative way, right? Around the evidence-based policies and practices, with the end game being employment and really future mobility for our individuals with disabilities. So I've known you for many years. In fact, when you first began at ODEP, we were working together. We don't want to use the number of years. Let's not do that. It's been a long time. And I just want everyone to know that we honestly cannot have a more passionate and strong advocate at the federal level for supporting the workforce development of individuals with disabilities. So thank you, Assistant Secretary, for taking the time. I have to practice saying these words. They're so new to me, but it's great. Thank you. So we're going to, are you on mute still? You're on mute. There we go.
Here I am. Yes. Thank you so much for that introduction. And I was smiling and chuckling. Absolutely. We will not use numbers to refer to all of the experience that we had working together. But I appreciate that you shared how passionate I am about this topic, because if I leave you with anything, it would be that issues related to the transition of youth and young adults with disabilities really feel my passion for this work. And it's why I am actually in this office today. So thank you for the introduction. Mm-hmm. I will also say it's incredibly rewarding to be back here at ODEP, and I'm really looking forward to the panel.
All right. Well, you know, the neat part about having a policy forum is we get to just make it a conversation, which I think is more engaging and spontaneous. And so, but I wanted to first just hear how it's going, right? How's your experience been as the Assistant Secretary of Labor?
Yeah, absolutely. It has been a little bit of a whirlwind. I have now been in the role for about 14 months. We're coming up on maybe 15 months, and actually just finished October, which for us is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. So I'm fresh off of a month-long really recognition and celebration of the contributions that individuals with disabilities make to not only our workforce, but really to our entire country. So I'm excited, and I bring that excitement with me every day. I will tell you a little bit about ODEP. I feel like sometimes at the federal level, we get stuck in acronym speak, and it's like, so what is that? And ODEP is a small non-regulatory agency within the Department of Labor. We report directly to the secretary, someone who's very familiar to folks in Boston, Secretary Marty Walsh, or former Mayor Marty Walsh. And we were created by Congress a little more than 20 years ago, about 20 and a half, to bring a particular focus across programs, policies, and agencies around advancing disability employment. It is our goal and our mission to not only increase the number of people with disabilities in jobs, but also the quality of the jobs held by people with disabilities across the country. And because we're a small agency, there are about 60 of us, and I'm privileged enough to work alongside really talented subject matter experts on a whole range of issues, but there are only 60 of us. And so much of our work is done in partnership and in collaboration. We work across the Department of Labor and all of its agencies. We work across the broader federal government and all of the agencies whose regulatory or enforcement work or the programs that they invest in some way impacts people with disabilities and their employment. And then we work with state and local government as well, ensuring that the policies that we are developing and influencing at the national level are also being enacted or adopted at the state and local level as well. So I'm lucky enough to spend much of my day talking to partners of ours and talking about people with disabilities and the unique opportunity that we have right now to ensure that they are a part of our economic recovery. So that's a long way of saying it's going well, but there's a lot of work to do.
That's great. And I want to encourage those that are listening, so excited you're all here, use the Q&A area there to if you've got some questions. For our assistant secretary that you'd like to make sure we try to get to, we'll be pushing those in. We have Robin Coyer-Kubicek from our team that'll be monitoring and punching in to say, hey, hold on, gang, here's a great question. So please let's make it a conversation. And then after we're finished, after the first hour, we'll be able to stay on. So if you're not feeling like we're getting questions answered, we'll be able to do that. We have just 1 hour with our assistant secretary, but we'll be able to stay on for another 30 minutes. So what can you share with us around some of the exciting developments? You know, what are some things that you're looking at the federal level and seeing sure. things happening around the states? What are some things that are popping up that you really think we need to be looking at?
Yeah, that's a great question. First, I'll talk a little bit about what our priorities are as an agency and how we think of our work in advancing the goals of the Biden-Harris administration. I would say foremost, I sort of segued away from it earlier, is that we want to ensure that we are building an inclusive recovery. And it's hard to go around today and not hear people talking about the economic recovery. And for us, a successful economic recovery is one that includes people with disabilities. We know from data that people with disabilities did experience a lot of job loss during the pandemic. And that was in part because of the sectors that they occupied. And as we see new investments made possible by legislation like the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the IIJA, or the Inflation Reduction Act, we want to make sure that those new opportunities that will lead to new jobs include jobs for people with disabilities. We also want to make sure, as we think about an inclusive recovery, because this is something employers are talking about all across the globe, we want to ensure that what we've learned over the last few years, particularly with the transformation and how we connect as workers, how we connect as, frankly, colleagues and family members, the transformation in our digital infrastructure, that leads to more opportunities for people with disabilities, and that we're not with an unintended consequence, maybe disenfranchising people with disabilities even further as we advance new policies. We are also focused very much on equity. It's certainly one of the earliest steps of the administration was to issue executive orders, including one focused on what we call DEIA, diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. And I spent a lot of my time talking about the A and what it truly means to have accessibility as we are building the workforce of the future, and as we are crafting and shaping workplace culture and the policies that we leverage to recruit, hire, retain, and advance talent. A third priority that we're very much focused on is advancing competitive integrated employment. For us, you hear Secretary Walsh and Deputy Secretary Sue talk about this all the time. We are focused on good jobs. Mm-hmm. And for us, a good job is one that's defined as making competitive wages. And for us in disability community, we want good jobs at competitive wages where people have the opportunities to work alongside their non-disabled peers. So competitive integrated employment. And that is a key part of the president's platform to advance competitive integrated employment and to phase out the continued payment of sub-minimum wage for people with disabilities. But it's really the fourth priority that I would highlight. It's one that is near and dear to my heart, and that is advancing transition and improved transition outcomes for youth and young adults with disabilities. As you indicated, our office recognizes how important it is to develop career pathways for youth and young adults with disabilities. We've always taken a holistic approach to improving post-secondary education and employment outcomes for youth and young adults with disabilities. And we really have an opportunity to build on the commitments of this administration, in that we're not just focused on youth and young adults with disabilities, but want to ensure that the most underserved communities within the population of youth and young adults with disabilities, so those who are youth of color, those who are in severely under-resourced areas, so living in poverty, that our policies and that our investments are tailored to their needs as well. And I'll perhaps just note one additional thing. You can see I'm excited about all of these things. I could go on forever, but something that we are particularly excited about here is a new proposal in our budget. And it proposed $15 million to support the development of what we call equitable transition models. And that is a goal of providing comprehensive coordinated services to enable low-income youth with disabilities from that key age range of 16 to 24 to successfully transition to employment. And our goal with this work is to build on past work of the agency, work that we've done in partnership with the Departments of Education, Health and Human Services, and the Social Security Administration, but really continue to build the capacity of states to ensure improved outcomes for these youth. I mean, it's clear that we've lost ground in the last couple of years. Youth with disabilities have particularly lost ground, and without deliberate attention, they will be, what we know from research, depressed earnings and depressed lifetime wages as a result of the lost opportunities to have work-based learning experiences, and also because of the learning loss that youth experienced during the peak of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's outstanding. Really exciting to hear the different areas in the competitive employment areas, certainly. That idea of how do we design that accessibility? We have to actually design it, right? Mm-hmm. And then when we do that, you know, our individuals are going to flourish, but so is the company, and helping them see the value that they can bring, that they can gain from that at the company level as well. Let's talk about just maybe a little shift into some of the data, just to get a sense of reminding us, right, of why this is such a critical issue in needing to think about this. So what are some of the key data points that you feel like our business and state leaders need to keep in front, in center, as they're trying to figure out where they're going to put their priorities in terms of workforce development?
Yeah, that is a great question. And we are lucky enough to have some skilled economists and statisticians on staff here at ODEF, and they work closely with our Bureau of Labor Statistics. For the last about 14 years, they have produced on a monthly and annual basis data related to the experience of people with disabilities in the workforce. And so it's to those numbers that we look to better understand what's happening. And I will say that the data are stark and really are demonstrative of the challenges that youth and young adults with disabilities face. For example, in 2021, the unemployment rate for youth with disabilities ages 16 to 19 was 21%. And for 20 to 24 year olds, that number was 17%. Perhaps most important there is that was nearly twice the unemployment rate for non-disabled youth. Something else that our agency is particularly attentive to is what the experiences are of youth and young adults right now. And for that, we look to data around mental health. So we've got research from a global sample from last year that showed that depression and anxiety symptoms of youth doubled since the start of the pandemic, with 25% of youth experiencing depressive symptoms and 20% experiencing anxiety symptoms. Those data are so troubling that our Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, issued an advisory not too long ago on youth mental health, highlighting the urgency of the problem. We also know that according to CDC data from earlier this year, about a third of the high school students reported experiencing poor mental health. They reported feeling persistently sad or hopeless. And I think underlying all of these data related to, so the aforementioned data on mental health, is that youth and young adults, and quite frankly, adults, have experienced a trauma in the last several years. But in fact, that trauma and the ongoing experience and this disruptions to learning and to work exacerbate what were already incredible gaps that existed between the educational and employment outcomes for youth and young adults with disabilities when compared to their peers without disabilities. So for us, we think about what will it take to close that gap? How do we equip youth and young adults with work-based learning experiences with the opportunities to grow and build their career aspirations and ultimately be set on a pathway where they will be able to thrive?
Mm-hmm. You know, and related to that, finding a sense of purpose and hope, right, for their future as well. You know, something that I'm really struck with, and I've known it because I've experienced in my work with you all years ago, but as you're talking, you're looking at intersectionality across so many departments and how across the area between health and human services, education, all these different groups, they're all coming together to support what we can do as a nation to improve our outcomes for youth with disabilities. But it really does take that cross-section perspective. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, one other thing I would add about that is it is so important because we know that youth and young adults will come into contact with multiple systems throughout their transition from secondary school environments, be it high school or other environments, into post-secondary education and employment. They may come into contact with an American Job Center. They may be in contact with vocational rehabilitation as a high school student or during their transition. There are certainly cliffs that exist for youth who may be aging out of the foster care system, or for those who may have been receiving benefits while they were a minor. So it is and has been long apparent to us that at the federal level, if we aren't doing the type of cross systems collaboration, if we're not modeling that cross systems collaboration, and frankly, if we're not working proactively to break down the silos and the very real bureaucratic barriers that exist that keep systems from collaborating, mm-hmm. Then we're doing that to the detriment of young people, and we're doing it to the detriment of their families who are trying to get them the supports they need to do what you said, mm-hmm. to build hopes and dreams and to be able to actualize them.
Now we've got a couple more minutes, and so I want to skip down a little bit. I guess what I'm wondering now is just kind of what are some exciting practices you're seeing with industry and business, what they might be doing to improve kind of the transition outcomes in supporting youth. What are some of the things we should be all looking at and trying to replicate?
Yeah, that is a great example. So one thing I would note is that we at ONEP, a lot of our work is done in partnership, but we also have investments in technical assistance centers that provide services to individuals, and also into what we call policy development centers that will work directly with states and systems. So one of those is our Center for Advancing Policy on Employment for Youth, or CAPE Youth. We, again, love acronyms sometimes, mm-hmm. at the federal level. And CAPE Youth really works to improve employment outcomes for youth and young adults with disabilities. And the way that it does that is by working with states and in states to surface what are the best practices, what are the examples of innovative use of funding during the peak years of the pandemic, using perhaps American Rescue Plan funding in order to support career and technical education. So we surface what are best practices with the goal of sharing that across peer states and ultimately being able to replicate them. So we do that at a policy level, but we also work very hard to stay aware of like what are model programs for transition and where is the evidence showing us some success in employment outcomes. And an example that is often pointed to is something like the Project Search Program, which is a business-led transition model where schools create collaborative partnerships with local large businesses. It can be in hospitals or bank centers or government centers. And the businesses give those youth an opportunity to transition into adult life, an opportunity to learn and earn, and to be in competitive work environments. And they provide supports during that transition, which we've learned, and the data show, ultimately lead to more successful outcomes. So not just being able to get the job, but being able to retain that employment over time. And there are models like that exist around the country. So that is something that we're excited about. But we're also excited because businesses are coming to us and they're saying, we need to find talent. Mm-hmm. And we want to work with you to tap into talent that perhaps heretofore we haven't tapped into because we were able to meet our needs of the sector, but now we're finding some challenges with that. So I'm excited about how the conversation is shifting around disability employment.
Thank you for listening to an episode of Career Readiness for All, presented by the Coalition for Career Development Center. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And for more information on the CCD Center, visit our website at www.ccd-center.org and follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.